Hey, welcome back to Shattering Mess. Boy, I'll tell you, there's a lot to talk about in the news. As bad as Islam is, Kirk, sometimes I think we are our own worst enemy.
There's no question. They couldn't be our good enemy if we couldn't help them. So,
you know, it's remember the story of Rome that Rome, while it created lots of enemies because it was constantly invading other countries, and it had the world's largest military, and it sent its military around the world, invaded other countries willingly. It kind of acted like the United States.
Mm-hmm.
That ultimately Rome died because of moral decay from within.
Sure. It's always true.
And it was way too bloated. They had to have a mercenary army because the Romans didn't want to work anymore. They had really basically a slave workforce and a mercenary army because Romans didn't want to fight. They didn't want to fighting, we were bribed. You got a percentage of whatever you could steal. And it was the least free institution in Rome. You signed up for 20 years, and you had absolutely no freedom during that time. And then internally, it was bloated, bankrupt, and morally dead with the likes of Nero and Caligula at all. Yeah, Hadrian. It reminds me of America.
Well, consider also that, like, when they conquered Egypt, they decided to bring all the wheat in from Egypt because it's so much cheaper, and they wiped out all the wheat farmers in Italy.
Yeah.
Sound familiar? I mean,
On every level. Yeah. In fact, if you look at, and I had to, when I wrote my analysis of why Yahweh called Rome the most vicious beast in the history of mankind.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at their financial policies, particularly starting about the time that they decided to sentence Yahusha to death by crucifixion, and then shortly thereafter to destroy the temple in Jerusalem and use the proceeds to build the Colosseum in Rome, enslaving and murdering Israelites. From that point on, all of their financial maneuverings were just like the United States and its Federal Reserve. We'll just create money. We'll create the illusion of money. We'll bribe people. It was America. They put the lid between the silver,
you know, and all of
that. Right. Oh yeah. We'll shave the size of the coins, and we'll the coins won't be nearly as pure. That was one of the first things they did. I think it was Caligula or Nero to rectify what was a bankrupt empire.
Mm-hmm.
They shaved off the size of the coins, started making them smaller, and diminished the purity of the coin.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they were great. So I understand that you have a question for moi.
Well, I got all my books in that on Hebrew and so forth, and Greek, and I was just reading through one of the dictionaries, and I stumbled across something I thought was really curious. The definition of Jerusalem, of course, is from where salvation, everything good flows. I mean,
yeah, it's a combination of the verb yara, which means source from which guidance, teaching, direction flow, and shalom, which is reconciliation, restoration, salvation, tranquility, harmony between various parties. So it's the source from which information, teaching, and direction that provides reconciliation flows. That's just simply looking at the two words that are combined to create Jerusalem.
Yeah. So if you think in context, this is where Abraham
affirmed the covenant with Yahweh
on the mountain, mm-hmm. and then you've got Dode moved the capital to Jerusalem, and
right.
And then Yosha, of course, has fulfilled the first four Mikrais with the help of the set-apart spirit.
In Jerusalem. And where is he says he's returning? Where is he returning?
Yeah, all through the three to go will all take place there as well. You've got his return and so forth.
You've got
the disciples all were there. The learners, and then by and the reason I thought about that was only because I looked up the word Damascus, and of course Damascus is synonymous only one person, and that person was made started his career and launched his campaign, so to speak, from the desert road leading up to Damascus and in Damascus. And so I was looking up the name of the word Damascus, and it's the blood in sackcloth.
Yeah, blood in sackcloth. Yeah, sackcloth is, of course, what you wear when you're mourning a person who has died, and blood is the sign of death when it's spilt blood, stained blood stains. So blood stains on someone mourning death is, and of course, Paul spent considerable time. Yeah, it came from that area.
Yeah,
Tarsus is where he was raised, but he spent most of his time in his youth in Damascus. Yeah, that's it is interesting. By the way, if you look up Jerusalem, you will not see the definition that we just shared. You will not ever see anyone associate Jerusalem with the verb yara. Even though it's obvious, you'll see it defined as city of peace, because in the Babylonian Akkadian language, meant city, and so they assume that Jerusalem was named using the Sumerian dialect, and they therefore called it the city of peace.
Just make up your own life. I mean, what the heck?
Well, what the heck? Just make up your own words. I mean, it doesn't matter.
Well, burn the dictionaries. What the heck?
Yeah. Well, you know, no, I had someone ask me the other day, you know, would you, that they're considering logos and logos or logos, depending on the way you want to pronounce it, and after the Greek word for word. And the question was, you know, that, you know, you have a an advanced version of it. What do you think? And, you know, I wrote this person back, and I said, listen, I have the most current version of Logos, which is it's called version 6. And I have the Scholar's Library, which is the top end of what you can get in terms of resources. And so I've got the best of the best, and I just recently upgraded, paid to do so. And it works about 50% as well as the original version of Logos that I bought almost a decade ago. Almost half as well. And I said, you know, the biggest issue is that over that time, Logos has gone from being a study tool with some Christian influence to now their logo is the Christian cross. And 95% of the material is aimed at Christians, and it's promoting Christianity. I said, so, you know, the issue is, do you want to spend money with a product that will diminish the amount of time that it takes to translate? I mean, it's an all interactive tool. Now, the tools are all interactive online. It's just that online it takes a little bit more time than it does on the response of the interactive tools in on your computer. So it saves a little bit of time, but are you willing to filter through material that is 99% misleading, including almost all the lexicons, because there are very few lexicons that are printed and published by companies that aren't trying to support their Bible translations.
Sure.
They're all Christians. But, I mean, you can look up at Strong's and read Yosha, and they'll say Jesus.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you can read Yod-Heh-Wah-Heh, and they'll write it as Yahweh, even though it's impossible for it to be Yahweh. And they'll say the Lord. You know.
Yeah, so you have to know ahead of time going in what to. A lot of them I don't even look at some of them are nice enough to say, this is what it means, and then here is the King James Version also translation. So if you ignore those completely and just go with the first ones, you'll get closer to it to begin with.
Yeah. What I do is, the first thing I do is, no matter what lexicon I'm using, or dictionary I'm using, I ignore, because they'll all present, the word was translated like such and such X number of times.
Mm-hmm.
And so they'll tell you the number of times. So I'll ignore all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll turn to the primary, secondary, tertiary definitions. And I'll read the definitions. Then I will look up and below to the words that were written similarly, and look at the definitions of those words.
Yeah.
And then I will look at what is the verbal root of this word, the actionable definition of the word. And I will consider that meaning. And then once I've done that, I'll consider a minimum of five or six other lexicons, and I'll do the same thing with all of them. And once I've considered related words, similarly spelled words, actionable roots of the words, whether the word is a compound, then I think you're in a position to render a definition on most words. There are some still. That then you're not there. And so the next step, I think, along the way, is I will look at how Yanoa first uses the word. And I'll probably take a dozen, as if the word is really challenging, I'll take a dozen different times that he uses the word and see what definitions fit best in that context. And then the last thing that I do is I look at the shapes of the letters and the pictures that they paint of the word. And my sense is, if you're not willing to do all of that, you know, you're going to be wrong.
Yeah.
As often as you're right. You're at least going to be inadequate.
Yeah. I don't have that many tools, but I've got four or five of these, and then I go on the internet and do a couple things there, and then I go with the other textbooks. The other resource things I have, but out of the five or six or those sources that I get, I'm usually not too far off the mark. So as far as verifying, like other translations, I can figure out pretty quick who's got it, who's making it up.
Yeah. The other thing that I find is helpful, and we've done a lot of that so far in the 23rd Psalm.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, if there's a primary word to convey something, and if the primary word was not used, but said a word that is used far less often, then I think we're compelled to look at what are the differences, what are the nuanced differences between the word that normally would have been used and the word that was chosen. He wants to guide me when I trust him with accurate, upright, and vindicating teaching. Throughout life, on account of his personal and proper name. That's pretty interesting stuff there. That tells you that, first of all, if he wants to guide with accurate teaching, that would preclude faith, wouldn't it?
That precludes faith.
There would be, that would also focus us on the Yahweh's book that he named after the Hebrew verb to teach. I told you that Yara was the basis of Jerusalem. It's Yara and Shalom. Well, isn't Yara the basis of another Hebrew noun? Even more, there's a Hebrew noun more important than Jerusalem. Hard to believe, but there is one. Torah.
Torah, yeah, of course.
Yeah, Yara is the basis of Torah.
Yeah.
So as a book that Yahweh named source from which teaching, guidance, and direction flow. And then you have here Dode, who was limited to that one source of information regarding God. All he had about God was that one source of information. And he says he wants to guide me when I trust him.
That's a pretty good source, though.
Yeah. With accurate, upright, and vindicating teaching. So the Torah's teaching is vindicating. It delivers righteousness.
Mm-hmm.
But that does two things to Christianity. One is, if there is teaching that leads to vindication, then there is no reason for faith.
No.
There's no reason to believe when you can know. Teaching leads to knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Knowledge leads to understanding. When you understand, there's no reason to believe. When you know, there's no place for faith.
then you can make a true decision as opposed to a guess decision.
So, and then the second is, it says that the teaching that Yahweh provided, which could only be the Torah because nothing else existed, that the Torah's teaching leads to righteousness, which is exactly the opposite of what Paul wrote in Galatians, which became the basis of Pauline doctrine, which is the basis of Christianity.
That's pretty frightening. That's a killer.
Pretty frightening, huh? Yeah. You know, Paul said that the Torah enslaves and that it cannot save and that it's pornographic. And here's Dode, who Yahweh clearly inspired and absolutely loves and has in views as being upright and righteous. He's saying exactly the opposite.
Yeah.
Now, that means that because of the fact that we have absolute affirmation that Yahweh has viewed Dode as righteous, going to base his kingdom when he returns upon Dode, and that he inspired Dode because the preceding psalm is predicts crucifixion and is the best eyewitness account of what happened on Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim in 33 CE, year 4000 Yah, ever written.
All right.
And you compare that to Paul, who Yahweh only mentions once by name to say that he was the plague of death. Never got a single prediction right, and contradicts the very God that he claims authorized him.
Yeah.
And it's not a choice between, well, you're going to believe Yahweh through Dode, David, or you're going to believe Paul on his own account. Because Paul doesn't give you that option, because he claims that the God he's contradicting is the one who authorized him. So
you don't
have the, there isn't a choice here. It's Paul lied, period.
Yeah, the absurdity of it all is amazing. I mean, that I bought it for even a length of time. It just,
yeah. Do you feel like you're being instructed and taught when you study these words and the letters that comprise them?
Constantly. It's like a great learning journey.
Is it similar like when you have students into your art classes?
Yeah.
And you provide information to help them know and understand the process of creating art and why it's done that way. Do you feel like you're in the same role with Yahweh teaching you about something even more important than art, which is life?
Yeah, I could say the same thing my students say to me. You know, I learn something every time I come in here. So same way with me every time I do it. Is
right.
You pick
right.
up a little, you glean a little something here or there, or sometimes it's a big impact, sometimes it's a subtle little thing that you go, oh, wow.
Sometimes your perspective is enhanced. Sometimes your understanding is increased. Sometimes your knowledge is elevated. But you're always picking up something.
Yeah, it's impossible not to.
Right. So from the negative point of view, this completely destroys Pauline doctrine, half the Christian New Testament, salvation through faith and everything Christian. But from the positive side, you know, through Dode has just laid out the path to him. Teaching.
Right.
Instruction. Instruction that you can depend on. Instruction that is upright, straightforward. And that he said, it's God's will to instruct. So why does anyone ask, what's God's will for my life? Kirk, as we were broadcasting the show this morning, as a matter of fact, about 30 minutes ago, I received an email from one of the most active participants in the Shabbat show that that we do, Chuck. And Chuck says, hi, I've been enjoying Shattering Myths recently. In fact, he didn't say recently sounds like he didn't enjoy it. Now he's enjoying it because we're looking on Psalm 23. He says, actually, been enjoying the Shattering Myths show and recent Psalm 23. Curious if there could also be a connection with Psalm 22. You know, we just referenced that. Well, we know that Dode is inspired because the 22nd Psalm is the best, most accurate eyewitness account of Yosha's fulfillment of Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim 1,000 years later. He says Yosha is referenced in the opening stanza of the 22nd Psalm, and it seems to paint a vivid picture of the fulfilling of Pesach and Matzah. Could, and also Bukurim, by the way. Could 23 be referring to its aftermath, to its consequence, to deliverance, and to Bukhurim? How would you respond to that?
Well, it could. Everything has multiple levels of meaning. I mean, it's going to be
I would answer it absolutely. Absolutely. So, 23rd Psalm is the prophetic portrait of the means Yahweh would deploy to enable the covenant promises to his children, the fulfillment of the first three Moed Mikre in year 4000 Yah. That portrait leads to there's one aspect. In fact, this is really interesting. In 33 CE, the three events that took place together are depicted in Psalm 22.
Mm-hmm.
Pesach, Matzah, and Bukhurim. On Pesach, Yosha's sacrifice as the sacrificial lamb on the upright pole, the Edon, on Mount Moriah, which means to revere Yah, in Jerusalem, which is the source from which instruction regarding reconciliation flows. In year 4000 Yah, he enabled on Pesach us to become immortal, which is the first benefit of the covenant. And then on Matzah, as it's depicted in the Psalm, he paid the price, the ransom, to enable us to become perfect. And then the psalm talks about him seeing the light, him being restored, which is the fulfillment of Bukhurim, where we are adopted into Yahweh's family, which is the third benefit of the covenant.
So why couldn't this be Shavuah? I mean, we're enlightened, we're empowered. I mean, that's all we've been talking about for about the first three verses.
Exactly. What this is talking about, the 22nd Psalm talks about the fulfillment and the consequence of the fulfillment of the first three Moed Mikre.
Sure.
The 23rd Psalm speaks exclusively about the fulfillment and benefits of Shavuah, which enable the fourth and fifth benefits associated with the covenant to be enlightened and to be enriched, to be empowered.
And when they talked about it at the time, and they were empowered, they were telling them how to achieve it. You walk down the path. This is what all this stuff means. And this is kind of the section we're going on right now that answers all the same questions. What he wants, to use Scott's approach, what he wants, where you find the teaching, how along the path, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, I mean,
so what we found here is that Yahweh wants us to learn from him. Yahweh wants to teach.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's before I go there, though, I just want to thank Chuck for writing this. I had made the connection between inspiration, proof, 22nd Psalm, to the 23rd, telling us about what we're going to experience in eternity. We'd made that connection.
Yeah, he's absolutely right, though. Absolutely.
But there's a far more profound connection, and he's right.
Well done.
And so it's this, when the family looks at Yahweh's teaching collectively, and we examine it and make those connections, we come to understand he just turned us on to an extraordinarily important realization.
Mm-hmm.
22 and 23, the two Psalms, the first is the most vivid, the most accurate, the most detailed presentation, an eyewitness account of what would occur 1,000 years later, now 2,000 years in our past, with the fulfillment of Pesach, Matzah, and Bukhurim, and how those three enable the first three benefits of the covenant, us to become immortal, perfect, and then adopted by Yahweh. But Yosha and the set-apart spirit also fulfilled the fourth Moed Mikre in year 4000 Yah, 33 CE, on our pagan calendars. And the 24th Psalm is all about how we're enriched and empowered and enlightened. That's all we have been talking about.
Yeah.
He's presenting the benefits of the covenant in order.
So we learn something every day, don't we?
Oh, man. And that's, on the level of excitement, that's by 10 on a 1 to 10 scale, because for a lot of reasons. One is, I've come to realize that the only reason the Torah exists is to direct us to the covenant.
Mm-hmm.
And that the covenant is the means of salvation. If salvation is a byproduct of the covenant. and that Yahweh only saves his children. And it's only going to be the covenant children that gets to experience life with him in all eternity. And that that life has to be exactly as it's being depicted in the 23rd Psalm. And so you put those things together and you realize Yahweh is, through Dode, his favorite person, the smartest person who ever lived. His outline, in chronological order, the benefits, the five benefits of the covenant. That's pretty exciting stuff.
That's pretty cool. That's a biggie. That's a world.
Yeah, and it's and he's revealing it through the guy that I enjoy the most, by far the most.
Well, obviously he did too.
He did too. Yeah, there's something special about Dode. I mean, Dode figured it out. He was super, super smart. He made the connections. He came to know, and he made the connections, and he not only figured it out, Dode's great thrill in life wasn't actually coming to know, which he enjoyed. It wasn't because he just says, I love your teaching. I mean, he says it over and over again. I love your Torah. It wasn't his tendency to make connections so as to understand. And he must say that he is the author, if you will, of the Hebrew concept of bien, making connections to understand. That wasn't even Dode's greatest love.
No, he just
What love did Dode have that was greater than coming to know what Yahweh said and coming to understand what Yahweh was offering? There is one love that I think screams from all of this that is even greater than that.
Well, he just loved his Torah. I mean, he loved
the... Yeah, well, that's the first one, coming to know.
And
the second one is bien, coming to understand. There's something that Dode enjoyed even more. You like to paint, don't you?
Oh, he responded. He responded to him.
Well, yeah, he does respond. You like to paint, right?
Sure.
Do you enjoy teaching others how to paint them grow even more than painting yourself?
Oh, of course, you get a kick out of it.
Dode's primary love was sharing in the lyrics to these songs what he had come to know and understand. That was his passion.
Yeah, pretty plain in the 119. So yeah.
What is Yahweh's passion? It says it right here in this verse.
He wants to do this.
He wants to teach. What did Dode want to do? He wanted to share Yahweh's teaching.
Teaching.
Now, do you think maybe we figured out what Dode and Yahweh had in common that caused Yahweh to say, "This rascal man, he's my favorite dude."
Yeah, well, y'all's probably sitting up there. Had gone, these people are slow.
These people are so slow. They got there. Actually, I don't think he's saying these people are slow. You know, I said, okay, they got there.
Okay.
They got it. Yes. Yeah, hallelujah. Yeah, they got it. I mean, you've got to figure it out because, Dode was a bad dude in terms of his behavior. So what is it that causes Yahweh to like him, to love him, to respect him, to care about him more than anybody else? Why was Yahweh so intent on inspiring Dode? Because Dode loved to do the thing that Yahweh loves to do most.
Yeah, and he's not afraid. He's not afraid
to teach.
Regardless of the
fact. Right.
Yeah.
Now, do you think there was that? Now, with Dode's situation, because he's inspired, there's no chance that he can ever say anything that's wrong. You and I are trying to teach what Yahweh said, and we don't have all of our oars in the water.
All day long.
We do.
I do.
We're a little slow on the uptake.
Far better than that, but I certainly.
However, there's an advantage to us occasionally having a miscue. There's an advantage to the slowness to which we make these connections. There's an advantage, actually, to us not only making mistakes, but admitting that we have made them. There's an advantage to us beginning a 15-minute segment, in fact, a 20-minute segment, Kirk, on talking about the process that we use to define what these words mean, to figure out what these words mean. We spent 20 minutes this morning on the process that we use to define what these words mean. So what is the advantage of us being slow, a bit dumb, flawed, prone to error, methodical, in this whole process? There is an actual advantage that we have overdoed in this regard.
Well, it would encourage people to go ahead and do it if they can do it.
Right. Absolutely. We're not only encouraging people to do this on their own, to enjoy the thrill that Dode and you and I are experiencing, but we're providing a process which they can use to go after it. So it's they don't have to be perfect. They don't have to know it all. Just engage. Use this process. Use these tools. And engage, and you too can not only know, you can understand, and you can celebrate this, and then you can have the joy of sharing it. You know, who's the person I talk about all the time that I used to get, you know, countless letters saying he's Mr. Meanie, and it's Larry.
Sure.
And what has Larry done?
What?
He's come to know. He's made the connection so as to understand, and now Larry has the thrill of teaching.
Sharing. Yeah, he does.
Sure, yeah. The uncomfortable truth, yeah.
He's still a working man like the rest of us, but he's...
Yeah, still a working man like the rest of us, yeah, absolutely.
But he's a lot of time put in there.
Right. Look at Richard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Richard, not all that many years ago, literally didn't have a dime to his name, neither he nor his wife. And now they host the site that by far most people who come to know Yahweh come to know him through Richard's site, the blessyahweh.com site.
Good thing.
So if you want to know what God's will is for your life, he wants to guide you. He wants you to trust him.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants to guide you with accurate, upright, and vindicating teaching throughout life.
Absolutely.
Tzedak. Correct, straightforward, honest, just, innocent, fair, prosperous, righteous, and proven. That doesn't sound like pornography to me.
No.
And yet he's speaking of the Torah.
Yeah.
Well, doesn't sound like that book can't say it because it's tzedak means to proclaim innocent,
mm-hmm.
to vindicate.
And perfection comes from matzah.
Yeah.
With matzah, so the whole thing is absurd. And he knew
it. Yeah, and it doesn't sound like this is enslaving, like Paul said, because it means tzedak means to stand upright, not to be bowed down.
How do you get somebody, enslave somebody by empowering them and giving them, increasing them in every dimension?
Yeah, how can the Torah be wrong if tzedak means right?
Mm-hmm. upright. Straight
down. Yeah. How could it talk to about enslavement when tzedak means to be prosperous? I mean, how much more in your face could this be? And then it says an accurate and upright vindicating teaching throughout life. It's magal, and every English Bible translates as path. You know, there is a Hebrew word for path. It's derek.
Mm-hmm.
Derek. Every time Yahweh wants to say, I want you to walk down this path. This is my path. It's always Derek.
Mm-hmm.
Always. And here, he chose a word that is used so seldom. It only appears 16 times. I'll bet you that Derek appears 500 times. So if he wanted to say path, would he have written the word that appears 500 times that means path? Or would he have chosen a word that is only used a handful of times to convey something different? Yeah, it's a path, all right, but it's a path through life. It's a means of teaching how one should live their life.
Mm-hmm.
And this magal, this word that was chosen, speaks of a direction in life regarding the way to live and the path to walk, which leads to a protected encampment. It's from a goal.
Mm-hmm.
To roll away and be entrenched. Like our sin was rolled away from us. Gagal, Golgotha, you know, it's mm-hmm. to roll away the stone. The sin has been rolled away from us on account of, and it's for the sake of his personal and proper name. And yet his personal and proper name was the first word in this psalm.
Mm-hmm.
Just as Yosha is the first word in the previous psalm. And yet, these religious buffoons replaced Yahweh's name, and they made it a lord. Wow.
That's pretty telling right there. I mean, not only that, but they just the fact that it's the Yahusha's name is there, and then we meet him as Yahweh.
Now, why would you think that Yahweh wants to teach with accurate, upright, and vindicating teaching throughout life for the sake of his personal and proper name? He's not saying it's, you know, Dode is not saying that, you know, this is for the sake of his own entertainment.
No.
He's not saying this is for the sake of him being the judge. He's saying that's for the sake of his amusement, for the sake of his name. Wow, that makes his name, like, on the top 10 list of things that could be important.
Yeah.
A 10.
Well, also, don't consider that you'll be taking his name, too.
Yeah, and doesn't it mean that his name must convey something that is consistent with being guided to being upright? In fact, are there a couple of people who are upright in his name?
They're standing totally upright, arms raised.
Yeah, and isn't there a hand reaching down and out to us to guide us?
To lift us up and guide us, right.
And isn't there a reference to being made secure and being increased, added to,
the tent
in the midst of it?
The old tent peg, the wall.
Yeah. Goodness. So he's telling you here, if you want to be properly guided, which is what Yahweh wants, then you need to look at his upright, vindicating, accurate, and trustworthy teaching for how to live one's life, because all of that is conveyed in his name. His name summarizes this. It represents the very statement that Dode has just made.
All right.
And yet, not only, Kirk, does everyone miss it when they replace his name with the Lord and they get exactly the wrong meaning, but they don't look at the letters that originally comprised his name that scream all of this, especially to an artist.
Yeah, the whole story. All right.
The whole story is in his name.
I'll see you on Thursday.